Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland and I'm joined once again by my esteemed colleague, Scott Benjamin.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, you've asked me back a few times now.
I know. I keep doing it because you keep saying yes.
Well, I appreciate the invite. This is always a fun one to do.
And it's great. You know, I always like to have him on. Usually we have Scott on to talk about things that have to do with cars because that's a world that Scott's quite familiar with. I don't even know how many episodes car stuff is up to now, but it's got to be in the hundreds and hundreds. So.
It's like 650 or so.
Yeah, so you guys are... You've been around for a while and you've talked a lot about cars, but this time I thought we'd talk about something a little different. We're going to talk about e-bikes, which, as you mentioned before we started recording, the E stands for the sound you make when you're riding it.
Oh, that's if you're going downhill really fast, I guess.
I often follow that up with a series of other sounds, some of which make words that I can't say on this podcast. But we were talking about electric bicycles, various types of electric bicycles, and kind of some of their counterparts that are similar to them. And you might have seen stuff about e-bikes recently. There's been a couple of products that have been coming out of the prototype stage that have made it something that is more accessible to the general public. Before, I would say it was like a very niche audience, like bicycle enthusiasts and some do-it-yourselfers who really were into this. But now we're actually seeing it where people who are living in maybe city environments can get hold of these, especially if they're trying to transition from car ownership to something else. I mean, you've probably heard the story about millennials not flocking to car ownership the way previous generations have. In fact, we talked about that a couple times in previous episodes. Mm-hmm. So... bicycles are becoming more and more important in the United States. They've been important in other parts of the world for ages, and electric bikes are becoming a big part of that. But here's the interesting thing. Long way to go for this, but they're not a new idea.
No. They're far from a new idea. In fact, this goes back, oh, what, 120 some years now?
I think. Say what?
Yeah. Long, long time ago. So what, back to, I want to say it's in the late 1800s, right?
Right.
I think my notes say the mid to late 1890s, but the first one that I've actually got an account for, you know, the actual, the date that was given, mm-hmm. it's right around 1897.
Wow.
And it had a double electric motor design. Now, there may have been one prior to that, I'm not sure, but it actually had two electric motors. And we've talked about the complexity of a two-motor design earlier today. It seems like it would be an impossible thing to do, really.
Right.
Nearly impossible.
At least it would seem impractical.
Oh, that's it. Maybe not impossible, but impractical. That's a better way to say it. Because we talked about the pros and cons of different types and how they work and the characteristics of each one and what you would have to do to pair two of them together
right.
to make them work in tandem.
Right, yeah. What happens if you cut the power to one and you forget to cut the power to the other, and then next thing you know, you're doing flips?
Well, I have a feeling in 1897 it wasn't quite as complex as we're making it out to be. It
right.
was probably a lot simpler. But then in 1898, so just 1 year later, there was a drive belt design that came around.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool because it's different than what we're seeing today, which you might think you're seeing that today, but you're seeing probably a version of a moped, really, or something like that, which we'll talk about the difference of that, too. And then in 1899, this is one that I really wanted to talk about just for a second. There was a patent, you know, pulled for a friction roller wheel design, which is really unusual. And this is one that we haven't seen maybe ever on a bicycle recently.
Can I make a guess on what this is?
Sure.
Because I haven't read the patent. So what I would guess is this means that there would be an electric motor that would turn a small wheel that is actually right up against one of the primary wheels on the bicycle. And the rotation of the small wheel is translated into the rotation of the larger wheel.
That's exactly right. Now, it seems very inefficient, doesn't it, to do it that way. It was mounted, I guess, would be behind the rider's seat above the wheel.
Gotcha.
And the pressure was a downward force on the wheel, on the surface of the wheel where it would contact the road.
Right.
And that translated to, as you said, the actual drive wheel.
Which, to me, that would be not just inefficient, because obviously the smaller wheel is going to have to rotate many, many, many more times mm-hmm. faster than the large wheel.
Yeah.
Right. But also it means adding more wear and tear on that particular wheel of your bike.
You're exactly right. And it seems like a difficult design to make work. But I just wanted to tell you that, you know, even prior to 1900, people are really thinking about this. They're really, you know, considering the idea that an electric bike is something that is necessary to get around town. And quite honestly, you know, where did they have, it's not like they were in a crowded city at that point, probably.
Right.
It's not likely. They might have been, but it would be more for, you know, like a country ride or something like that they would use it for, right?
I would imagine so. I mean, unless you're talking about, when you see the rise of the cities, really because of the rise of the automobile,
mm-hmm.
when you see the rise of the automobile, which gave rise to cities getting larger and larger and more sprawl, perhaps you could argue that the bike would have been useful for someone who cannot afford a full automobile, but still needs to make a commute. But we often, here in the United States in particular, we have often thought about bicycles as recreational devices, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that we use. You want to go out and get some exercise. You want the fresh air. You want a nice, relaxing ride. And in fact, when we were first talking about doing this topic, it was only when we started talking about the possibility of using a bike instead of a car or taking public transportation in order to get around regularly that something like an electric bike really started to make sense. Because otherwise, you kind of want that exertion. That's part of the experience.
Yeah, let me just for 1 second go back and kind of defend my country ride example, because the way that I picture cities right around the turn of the century, you know, the turn of the 19th century,
sure.
is that they were crowded with cars, which were relatively new at the time,
right.
brand new at the time, carriages, lots of horses, lots of people walking. But I don't necessarily think of seeing a lot of bicycles in city environments.
That's
from photos of that day, of that era.
Right.
Or depictions of it, you know, whether it be drawings or whatever. You don't see a lot of bicycle riders. However, today in crowded cities, you do see a lot of bicycle riders.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially in places like China where it's extremely crowded and, you know, maybe not everybody can afford a motorcycle maybe,
right.
or a big scooter, or definitely not a car.
Right.
Bicycle is a good option. But as you said, they're not necessarily in it for, you know, exercise or to get out and, you know, to get the heart pumping or whatever.
Right. Especially in places where pollution might be so bad that you don't necessarily want to be breathing hard.
No, this is just like an inexpensive method of transportation,
right,
a way to commute. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, to take up as little space as possible when you're not using that thing.
Right. Yeah. So now we're starting to see this grow in popularity here in the United States. Like I said, in some parts of the world, in parts of Europe, it's been popular for years. And in fact, electric bikes have been around for quite some time in both Europe and the United States, as well as Asia. But these are, you know, we've seen a lot of development over the last, I'd say, couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen really some interesting development to the point where it's become something that the average consumer can be aware of, as opposed to, you know, the bike enthusiasts.
Part of that is battery technology.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of you here, but part of that is battery technology, because lead acid batteries, that's the kind of battery that you typically find in an automobile now,
right,
a typical one, not one of the newer ones, but they're big, they're heavy, they're bulky. I mean, it's just it's difficult to carry that kind of weight around on a bike. You're trying to remain as light as possible with this type of setup, as we'll talk about in a moment. But, you know, with some of the newer battery technology, like lithium ion batteries, or even, you know, some of the nickel cadmium batteries,
sure,
you know, or nickel metal hydride batteries, or even the sealed, some of these, I guess the sealed lead acid batteries, some of them are small enough that could, you know, you could potentially use them, but the lead acid batteries tend to be a lot heavier than the other,
right,
types of batteries.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, those batteries have been a challenge, not just from a size perspective, but also safety, obviously. Lithium ion in particular, you know, you want to be really, you don't want to overheat your lithium ion batteries.
Well, and it's not a great idea to also be biking around with a box of sulfuric acid.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. That can be a bit of a drag if things go wrong.
It sure could.
But I mean, like I think of here in Atlanta, for example, things can get pretty hot. So imagine that you have a really hot day and you're taking your electric bike for a ride, mm-hmm, and you've got your battery, your lithium ion battery, and you're hitting, you know, you have to hit Dead Man's Hill. It's the craziest hill in Atlanta, which I just made up. And so you kick the bike into full gear to try and help you as much as it can to get up there. I could imagine that lithium ion battery getting really kind of deteriorating rapidly due to, we're operating at such a high temperature.
Yeah, heat is the worst enemy of batteries.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that they die often in cold weather, but heat is where the real damage occurs, and then you don't realize it until it's cold and all those chemical reactions are slowing down.
Right.
And that's when you really feel the pain from, you know, the damage that was done in the summer months.
Right. Now, of course, the nice thing is that most of the systems we're talking about, in fact, all the ones I'm familiar with, have replaceable batteries. So,
mm-hmm,
worst case scenario is you swap out a dead battery for a new one. Obviously, you want to preserve the life of your batteries as long as possible for multiple reasons. Financial would be a big one, but also just, you know, it's more environmentally friendly to go easy on your batteries so that you don't have to worry about, well, how do I dispose of this thing now that potentially has toxic materials in it.
But let's be honest, the financial reason is the big one.
That's the big one. I mean, it is the big one. I mean, another thing we need to point out is electric bikes can be pretty expensive. Even the conversion kits where you can turn your existing bike into electric bike, some of those can dwarf the price of your original bike.
Absolutely. I've seen kits, just conversion kits that range anywhere from, you know, I think it was about $775,
right,
up to $2,000, where you're not getting an entire bike.
Yeah.
You're getting the kit to make your existing bike into an e-bike. And,
yeah,
and of course, the $2,000 kit comes with everything you would ever want.
Right. All the sensors and everything.
The $775 kit doesn't even have a battery with it.
Right.
I think there's no controller. I mean, it's just it's a very basic kit where you're going to have to add parts to it in order to make that even work.
Right.
So it can be expensive, but maybe it's better just to buy a bike right from the manufacturer.
Yeah. There are choices, right? I mean, you can get a bike that is designed as an electric bike from the beginning,
mm-hmm,
and it's got the systems all integrated into it already. So it's going to, those are going to look the nicest,
yeah,
obviously.
They're going to cost a lot.
If you convert a bike, then depending upon the conversion kit you have, if it's one of those where it's a real DIY kind of approach, it'll work, but it'll probably also look kind of weird because the bike that you have was not originally intended to be an electric bike. You had to add all these different components on it. You have to put a battery pack somewhere on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means that you have a big bulky section of the middle of the bike. But there are other types of electric bike converter kits as well that incorporate all the elements into the hub of either the front wheel or the rear wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of cool. Now, it does mean that the hub of that tire is going to look enormous compared to a normal bicycle tire.
Sure.
But all the other elements are hidden away, right? You don't have, and there are only a couple of examples of this, but you don't have like a big external battery pack that's hanging off one of the bars of your bicycle.
Yeah. Unless you go back to one of those kits like we talked about, where,
yeah,
you know, that you do have a big canvas bag that has a battery attached to it and the speed controller and all the other electronics that go along with this. And, you know, I mean, that stuff is going to be zip tied to the frame of your bike. I mean,
yep,
it's going to look like it's a kit that you added onto your bike. It's not going to be as buttoned up as the bike that would come from the manufacturer,
right,
would look. Because they, you know, they drill holes in the frame and they feed the wire through there and it only exits where it needs to. It's very,
right,
minimally obtrusive, I guess, on the design of the bike.
Yeah, as opposed to having zip ties every couple of inches to,
yeah,
hold everything in place.
And there still kind of is that element of these, even with the manufacturer built ones, you know, the ones that come from the factory, you know, where I don't know how many they build a day, maybe, you know, it depends on the place, I guess, but
yeah,
I would think it's very few because these are hand assembled, of course.
Yep.
But yeah, they're pretty well buttoned up, but, they still have a little bit of that, you know, a little bit of that look like it was kind of made at a workbench.
Yeah, a little janky.
But
in a good way. Like kind of in that, you know, again, like that DIY sort of approach.
And they're getting better and better.
Yeah. And so I guess it's good to talk about, you know, the different types of electric bikes as well as to compare them against other powered bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
So the powered bicycle I always thought of when I was growing up was not electric at all. It was gas powered. It was,
mm-hmm,
the motorized bicycle, the moped.
Moped, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got the motorized and pedal, PED, so moped, or velocipede. Some people say that's from the old term for bicycle, velocipede, which dates to even earlier in the 19th century.
That was my favorite arcade game, velocipede.
Velocipede, yeah,
yeah.
Where you had to, you know, shoot the little penny farthings as they came down the screen. Yeah, the moped is similar in many ways to electric bicycles, except, of course, it's not running on electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an actual motor.
A tiny gas
engine, I should say.
Yeah, a tiny gasoline engine.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And that's what I tend to think of, too, when I think of a pedal-assisted powered vehicle.
Yeah.
I think of that. That's the one I go to. It's like that old moped design where you would see somebody pedaling like crazy to either get it moving, or more typically, you would just see the pedals, you know, remaining where they are. The people would have their feet on the pedals, but
right,
it would be all, you know, gasoline power that they're using. They're using just the engine to propel,
right,
themselves forward.
Yeah, they've got a throttle control, and the throttle control provides the power, which drives the drivetrain, and you don't have to do any pedaling at all to keep it going.
It was very rare to see somebody actually pedaling a moped.
To the point now where the term moped, by at least some people, is used as a generic term for any non-motorcycle motorized two-wheel vehicle.
Okay, this is where we had a little discussion about,
yeah,
this at our desks earlier today, because we sit next to each other in the office,
yep,
and we were kind of throwing this back and forth a little bit, like, well, okay, if this is a moped, what is a scooter, and then how do you differentiate between that and a motorcycle? And, you know, there's traditional ways to do that by engine size. You can
right,
say that, you know, a moped is between 49 cc's and all the way up to 250 cc's. But now I think that there are some, they're called like maxi scooters,
mm,
that are bigger than that. They're capable of going faster, but they're still considered a scooter, but they're allowed on roads, but not on highways. And you do sit with your feet forward, you know, on a platform in front of the chair. So there's like a pass through between the handlebars and where you sit.
Right. You don't have your feet on pedals, in other words.
Or pegs.
Yeah.
As you would on a motorcycle.
It's on like a little, just its own little platform.
But some of those maxi scooters are capable of, you know, 80 miles per hour, 75 miles per hour, something
right,
like that. that's not the typical scooter that I think of. I think of the old Vespas, you know, which were, you know, the older ones, which were creeping along at about 30 miles per hour max. But they did have that traditional seating position where you can picture that, right, with the platform in front where your feet are side by side in front of you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think of. They didn't have a pedal mechanism at all, like a moped does. So that, to me, was the break between scooters and mopeds. But now I guess there's a blurred line between what's a moped and what's a scooter.
Yeah, I think it's just in the use of the term being very casual about it, right? Yeah. I think if you were to nail someone down and say, no, let's get to the technical distinction between these, they would agree. But I think casually people refer to practically anything that doesn't look like a motorcycle as a moped or a scooter,
and
one or the other.
And honestly, it really doesn't matter. No. We're just trying to segment these different things into, you know, just to find a way to discuss them where everybody can picture the same thing.
Now, the interesting thing also about mopeds to me is that some of them are designed so that, yeah, you could pedal and propel them just under pedal power if you needed to, like if the engine died or you ran out of gas.
Yeah,
it's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. This is a very heavy vehicle. Sometimes it looks like you're pedaling like crazy and you're not really getting anywhere. Some of them, really, the pedals were more about getting the engine started,
mm-hmm.
right? So it wasn't about providing any form of propulsion. It was just about getting the engine to the point where you could get the ignition going and take off.
Exactly right.
So that kind of separates it from electric bikes in another way. So you've got two big separations. One, you're not using gas with electric bikes. But the other is that with a true e-bike, you are supposed to be able to pedal and power the bike, or you use some form of pedal assist. That's where you get the Pedelec type of bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's often what they're called, where they are providing some of the power to turn the wheel of the bicycle so that it offsets some of the force needed.
Yeah.
And then you have power on demand electric bicycles, where the electric motor is providing all the power you need to propel the bike forward. And you can cut the motor off and then continue to pedal. Or if you just want to have a real easy ride of it, you just power the throttle and that gives the electric motor the power to push the bike forward on.
So you're using it as if it was a scooter, not a bicycle at all.
Right.
For the power on demand systems.
Right.
Okay. And the Pedelec, when you mentioned that, I think people might be confused by the term, but that's a combination of three words. It's pedal, electric, cycle, and it's Pedelec. It's spelled a little weird, but Pedelec.
Yeah. I've also heard Elecpeds simply to say that it's similar to mopeds. So instead of motor pedals, if you want to think of it that way, it's electric pedals. But Pedelec is definitely the more common of the two that I've seen.
And, you know, these are pretty popular, I think, in, as we said, in cities. You know, the Pedelec systems are the ones that we see a lot of, because those are the ones that if you're pedaling, you get like a, and I've watched a few videos of these recently. That's how I'm kind of familiar with what's going on here. But when you get on them and you're pedaling, it's like you're feeling something that's pushing you.
Right.
It's like it's pushing you along, because these are rear wheel design things mostly. I mean, we've seen them on the front wheels, but that's more unusual. Usually they're on the back wheel.
Yeah.
So it's pushing you along. And a lot of times when you watch these videos of people who are reviewing them or testing them or trying them for the first time, you know, never tried an e-bike before, this pedal assist type system, when they get on them and they start riding, they start to giggle. You know, it's like they're laughing because they're barely pedaling, but they're cruising along as if they were really, really pumping the pedals like really fast. And they're passing every other bike on the bike path. You know, top speed vary between, you know, different models, but you're going, move along at a pretty good rate, a pretty rapid rate for the limited amount of pedaling that you're doing. And that's really the benefit of these Pedelec systems.
Yeah.
That and, you know, let's say you're riding into a headwind, or you're riding up a hill.
Right.
Which would be, you know, pretty important here in Atlanta because it's not a flat city by any means. So that would be helpful. But, the Pedelec systems can be used by, law enforcement. You know, if they're on bikes, it's a great thing because it gives them kind of an edge, I guess.
Yeah.
If they're trying to, I don't know, catch up to somebody who's on another bike.
Yeah.
It assists them in, you know, just having to do less work to get
more
up to
speed.
That speed.
Sure,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. And there's a lot of different variety of, different types of gearings and things that you can get with the different types of motors as well. So they have their own purpose. Like if you want one to go fast, you get this type of, of motor. If you want one that's going to pull a lot of weight, let's say that you're carrying a trailer, a small trailer behind your bike.
Cargo bikes.
Yeah, sure. Cargo bikes. I'm glad you said that because I had written down somewhere that I wanted to talk about that. There's a different type of motor than the ones we've been kind of focusing on mostly.
Right.
It's a geared motor that would be more efficient for heavy loads like that. If you're pulling a trailer, if you've got a cargo bike, like you said, or if you're a bigger rider, you know, somebody who's a little heavier on the heavier side, a geared motor might be the one that you want.
Yeah. Mid-drive motors are also really good about, pulling a lot of weight or, kicking into gear for something like a real steep climb. So let's say that you live in San Francisco and you've decided that you want a bike to work because you're crazy. Then you may want something like a mid-drive electric bicycle because it's going to give you a lot more oomph when you start hitting those really steep hills, those really tall steep hills. I mean, they're not just steep. They go on forever. You need that kind of...
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
When I went to San Francisco, this is a long time ago, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I had a friend who, you know, I graduated with this person and he was now working out there with his wife. Mm-hmm. And I was in town and I'd never been there before. It was my first time there. And they decided that the way we were going to get around town was on bicycles.
So this friend doesn't like you.
I don't know what was going on, but I was just huffing and puffing the whole time and would have to occasionally get off and walk my bike up the hill. And
yeah, it's crazy.
Well, as would they. And, you know, they were even accustomed to it. You know, they had been doing this for a year or 2 years at that point. So they were in a little better shape than I was on that bike. And honestly, even, you know, back, I lived in Michigan at the time. Even there, I wasn't necessarily biking all the time. So it wasn't really my thing.
Right.
But, you know, then we're in the, you know, these extremely hilly areas. We rode up to the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize until you're on that bridge that midway point is uphill.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming back was fine.
But, that's great.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I just could not keep up with that.
Yeah.
treacherous place to ride a bike.
And that's the sort of thing, like these bikes are really good to help for folks who want to use a bike more frequently, but they might encounter these issues. Or maybe, for example, you know, one of the little peek behind the curtain, the episode we're recording right now, you guys, is the very last full episode of any podcast in How Stuff Works to use this studio.
Yeah, this building.
Yeah. This studio that we are recording in right now is going to be broken down as soon as we're done and then moved across town. Now, when we go to that new place across town, it's closer to where I live. And I'm thinking about biking to work whenever the occasion merits it.
Fantastic. That's a fantastic idea.
Fantastic. I also am really thinking about getting an e-bike system, a pedelec system to help me because I don't want to have the experience of biking to work and arriving at work looking like I just biked to work in Atlanta.
Sure.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah, I understand. But see, you want a little bit of exercise at the same time, right?
Yep.
And there's going to be hills in between you and the office.
Yep.
And uphill both ways, I'm sure.
Yep. And, with a, you know, humidity ranging in the 90% area, you know, you can't get around the sweating. So
yeah. And we're talking about several miles. It's not like it's around the corner or anything like that. So
it's a good 25 minute ride from my house.
Okay. So that's a reasonable distance. I can completely understand why you would want something like this. Now,
Right. Now
me, I'm not a bike rider to begin with. I have one. It's collecting dust in the basement, I think. I think I still have it after the last move. I don't even know, but it's just not my thing. I mean, I don't live in town, so I don't really have a use to just quickly grab a vehicle and get somewhere, you know, five blocks away or whatever.
Sure.
But that would be a perfect use for somebody, you know, if they did have a need like that, or like you say, to get to work, you know, on days when it's sunny and humid, when you don't necessarily want to you know, fully exert yourself, get in there as well.
Right. And we could also differentiate really quickly between electric bikes and electric motorcycles. There are electric motorcycles.
Yeah.
Harley Davidson is touring around with one, showing it off, kind of a prototype electric motorcycle.
Yeah. That's, is that the, that's Livewire? Is that it?
I think
that's it.
I believe so. It's very quiet.
You know what? I have done a podcast about this. I should remember the name of it. I believe it's the Harley Davidson Livewire. It was the concept. They did a tour around the nation and they were allowing people to test drive that vehicle, and people who drove it really, or rode it, I guess, really, really liked it.
And the difference between an electric motorcycle versus an electric bike is that an electric bike has pedals that you can pedal and, you know, operate under manual power, whereas an electric motorcycle does not.
Sure.
That's the main designation.
And it's extremely powerful. It's just as powerful as a Harley-Davidson motorcycle would be, only in electric form. So, you know, all the other stuff that goes along with motorcycle ownership still apply.
And a lot of the considerations that you would have to have for a bicycle are no longer part of the thought process, right? You don't need to sit there and say, well, we can't put a motor on that's X powerful because then it adds so much weight to the bicycle that a bicyclist isn't going to be able to use it. With a motorcycle, you don't have to worry about that as much.
No, you just worry about how fast that thing's going to go.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about some of these motors, some of the ones. Now, keep in mind, like I said, some of these can be bought completely, like you can buy a whole bike that uses this sort of stuff, or you can end up buying conversion kits or these in-hub systems where it's really an e-bike inside a bicycle wheel.
Yeah.
So you literally just replace a wheel with one of these and it'll turn it into an e-bike, which is pretty cool.
You were talking about direct drive. Now, the direct drive are the ones that look like a pie pan in the middle of your wheel.
Yes.
And that's the one that everything is housed within that I guess it would be a plastic outer casing, right?
Yeah.
Plastic in most cases, I believe.
I think, you might find a couple that do some form of metal as the outside, like an aluminum exterior. But again, you want to have, generally speaking, you want to have something that's going to be able to vent heat, because it is going to build up heat inside of this thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, the direct drive is just one type. There's also the geared systems or the geared motors that we'll talk about as well. But I found a pretty good article that describes some of the pros and cons of both types of motors. So there's direct drive, there's gear drive, there's pros for both. Now, the pros for direct drive system, the pie pan type, you know, that has everything encased, they're a lot more durable than the geared systems. They're faster and they tend to be quieter as well.
Yeah.
There's actually more pros for the geared systems that we'll talk about in just a second, but they provide less drag. They're smaller, of course. They're lighter, but they do have more torque than the direct drive systems.
Yeah.
Now, I thought that was kind of strange. I would think, and that has to be just based on gearing, of course.
Right.
I mean, because you can make that work for you however you like, right? But the direct drive motors that we talked about, one thing that we said is that it's got to have a lot of torque in order to work, because the way it's mounted on the wheel, every one rotation of the wheel is one rotation of the motor as well.
Right.
And that has to be an extremely torquey motor in order for that to work.
Yeah. So, that's the benefit of having gears, right? You can play with how many times the motor has to rotate a wheel. You can use the different sizes of gears to determine the actual speed.
Sure. So you can gear it for speed, or you can gear it for pulling or for power.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Right. So kind of like a transmission in a car.
Mm-hmm.
And so you use these different things for different purposes. Like if you want to have a bike where it's just going to be the simplest version, the direct drive makes a lot of sense. It has the fewest moving parts of an electric motor compared to the other variations that we've seen.
And most of the kits that you'll find or that you'll see have that direct drive type of setup.
Now, I've seen some that are geared that are still all self-contained.
Sure.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's where you see essentially there's a gear that the motor turns, then there are maybe two gears that interlock with that, and then it goes inside a larger casing that has a gear mounted, teeth mounted on the internal wall of the hub,
mm-hmm.
and that's what causes the hub to turn, thus making the wheel turn. So all of that can be completely enclosed too, but you can also have what I call mid-drive motors, you have the external motor. It's not inside the hub of the wheel. Mm-hmm. It's mounted to the exterior of your bike. It typically taps directly into your bicycle's gear drivetrain. So you essentially replace the chain wheel that your pedals would attach to, the cranks on your pedals would attach to that.
I think they call that the crank set.
Yeah, you would replace that with the motor, the electric motor version. Mm-hmm. It has the same sort of wheel that you would have to mount the chain to.
Sure.
But the motor helps drive that wheel so that when you start pedaling, the motor drives the actual wheel that their pedal cranks are attached to.
This sounds a lot closer to the a motorcycle setup. Swapping the gasoline engine for the electric motor, of course, mm-hmm. but it's closer in position and the way that it drives that rear wheel, with a chain or a belt in some cases, right?
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. Those are a lot less common.
Right.
Then would be the direct drive motor, which is the hub one, or the other one, the more complex geared system that you described.
Right. Yeah. And these also tend to get really super expensive. These are the ones that can, be really efficient because they're already using the ideal gears to turn your bicycle wheel. They're using the gears that the bicycle wheel uses anyway, except they would use under your normal pedal power.
Yeah, and that's one thing that the direct drive motor does not provide you with.
Right.
So, the one that looks like the pie pan again, that really turns any bike that you're riding into a single speed bike, but that's really all you need.
Yeah.
And that was pointed out in one of the reviews I know when the guy's riding, he's saying, well, I have the ability to switch gears here, but I can't do that now that this is mounted, but I don't even need it because this kind of adapts to whatever I need to happen. You know, if I need to go faster, I just pedal a little faster.
Yeah.
If I need to slow down, I back it down. And, that's one thing that we should mention too is that, some of the reviewers were saying that there's that instant where you need to stop.
Yeah.
And this thing is still powering and there's a signal that's sent to that motor, that direct drive motor. And it's usually by slightly backpedaling. In 10 speed where you can kind of freewheel.
Yeah, yeah.
You can backpedal without mm-hmm. having to, hit a coaster brake like you would on an older bike.
Right. As long as you're not either on an old single speed bike where you would use the pedal brakes and they didn't have any hand brakes, just pedal brakes, or even a fixed gear bike where you could pedal backwards and that would actually cause the wheels to go backwards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was,
the fixies, as the bicycle enthusiasts like to call them.
Fixies. Oh,
yeah,
I've fixies. Never heard that.
Never?
So that's what's going on with this is that when you want to stop, when you want the assist part of this to stop, you backpedal slightly.
Right.
And then you use the handbrakes to bring yourself to a complete stop. Right. But there's that one moment, you know, where it depends on how fast you're going. If it's, you know, 5 feet or 10 feet that you travel in that time.
Yeah.
There's that moment where it's pushing you along. You would rather be stopping or, you know, you're trying to, you have to kind of plan ahead, I guess, a little more with this type of setup right now. They haven't quite got it exactly right where it immediately responds to the need.
Well, yeah, because when you're cutting power, what you're doing is, and I'll talk more about what's actually going on inside the motors here. When you're cutting power, you're essentially cutting electricity to electromagnets. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes a moment for that attraction between the magnets, the permanent magnets, or potentially another electromagnet inside the hub of your wheel to stop being attracted in that circular motion,
sure.
Stop being driven forward.
And this isn't so bad by any means that, you know, it's not worth buying it or anything like that. It's just, it's something that everybody noted, like, oh, that's a little strange. But once I adjust to that, everything works out fine.
Right. So, you know, let me talk a little bit about how those electric motors are working and mm-hmm. the basis on electromagnetism.
Great.
So I've talked about this so many times on Tech Stuff, and I know you long-term fans who have heard the electromagnetic lecture a billion times. So, you know, go ahead and put this on 2x speed and you can get through it. But I gotta cover it. So the basics of electromagnetism. If you have a coil of a conducting material, if you coil that conducting material around a core, like, you know, the classic classroom example is you take an iron nail mm-hmm. and you wrap some copper wire around the iron nail, and then you run an electrical current through that wire. That electrical current will create a magnetic field, and it will turn into an electromagnet. You can react with ferrous materials, ferrous metals. And so you can pick up iron filings with this thing because now you've got a magnet. If you put alternating current through it, then you've created a fluctuating magnetic field, which gets pretty interesting and is the basis of a lot of important technology. But anyway, if you've got these electromagnets, it creates this magnetic field. It'll attract other opposite poled magnet materials. So if you have permanent magnets, let's say you've got a whole bunch of neodymium magnets. Those are very popular for a lot of applications these days. And you set them up around, let's say, a wheel, a free rotating wheel. And then you've got stationary electromagnets. And you can control which electromagnets are turning on and off at any given moment. And you turn them on and off in a pattern so that it's constantly attracting and repelling the magnets so that it creates a rotational force that will cause the wheel to rotate. Now, this isn't free energy because you're pouring electricity into those electromagnets.
Yeah.
This is often one of the basics of you'll see people who are pedaling something they're calling a perpetual motion machine, but in reality, it's using electromagnets, which means that it has to get power from somewhere, which means it's not truly perpetual motion. It means it's perpetual motion as long as the electricity doesn't run out.
It's funny you said pedaling.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, sometimes the pun is unintended, as in this case, and sometimes it is intended. So with this rotational force, that's what provides the basics of the electric motor. By the way, the reverse is also true. If you put a conductor into a fluctuating magnetic field, then it will induce electricity to flow through that conductor. So in other words, if I have if I take that wire and I move it to something where there's a fluctuating magnetic field, meaning I've got this polarity reversing over and over and over again, electricity will flow through that copper wire. So the first version I mentioned, that's the basics of the electric motor. The second one is the basics of dynamos and magnetos and even alternators.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that in mind, that direct drive system we were talking about is the easiest to imagine. Think of the electromagnets as a circle of these coils of wire. So the coils of wire are kind of, if you're thinking of it in that pie shape, you turn the bicycle wheel on its side and mm-hmm. you were to pull off the cover, you'd look at essentially little columns of coils of electric wire set mm-hmm. up in a circle. And these would be stationary relative to the rotation of the wheel. They are mounted to the axle. They do not rotate. Okay?
They're
going to remain stationary compared to the rotation of the wheel. Around this, you would have a rotating wheel, a rotating chamber that has permanent magnets mounted on it. All right, now these are the magnets that are going to be attracted and repelled by the electromagnets in the center. And because these can rotate, that change in electromagnetism is what's going to make it move and make the wheel turn, whether it's to assist you or to completely take over and act as an electric throttle. So that's where your direct drive system comes in.
As in the power on demand bikes.
Exactly. And there are some that I've seen that can act as both. Like the mid drive, some of the mid drives can act as pedal assist, or then you can switch it to throttle control and then it just completely takes over for you. So this is the very basic version, the easiest one to understand with the electric motors. And, that chamber of permanent magnets, when it does one full rotation, that's the full rotation of the wheel, right? And, usually you have a multiple phase electric motor. And that sounds really complicated, but it's actually really easy. In fact, I'll give you a very simple, example. Let's imagine that we have a clock, an analog clock, round clock, regular old thing you've seen a billion times. Now, imagine that instead of a number at each space where there normally would be one, you've got one of those coils of electric or a copper wire. So you've got an electromagnet at each of the number spots.
Okay.
If you have a phase three motor, that means that one third of those numbers are all going to essentially switch on and switch off simultaneously. The other two-thirds will do the same with their respective groups. So with the 12-number version for a standard clock, your 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock positions would all turn on and off simultaneously. Then you would have the 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 10 o'clock ones doing the same, and the 2, 5, 8, and 11 o'clock ones doing the same. And by switching between these, you can have a smoother transition to keep the bike wheel moving as smoothly as possible.
Sure. So it's not like, it's not speeding up, slowing down, speeding up, slowing down.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's to try and keep that nice and smooth. And obviously, the more phases you have, then at least to some point, the smoother the experience will be.
Oh, you made that very easy to understand.
Yeah. So, I looked at this a lot to try and figure out how I was going to explain it.
Worked well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, that makes the direct drive really easy to understand. The geared ones are a little more complicated, but not by a whole lot.
Yeah, they're different, and they've got some parts that wear as well, because they've got nylon gears.
Yep.
And as you can imagine, those grinding on each other, they're going to show signs of wear over time, and you're going to have to replace parts in them. So they're a little bit more complex than that. There's actually quite a few different things. You know, they're a little bit noisier.
Yep.
They have a lower top speed typically. Now that, again, we can talk about gearing again if you want, but I think that everybody kind of understands that.
Yeah.
You can play with that gearing however you want for an increased top speed if you need to, but typically they have a lower top speed if you buy a bike that has a setup with a geared system. It's more for the heavy duty applications like the pulling or the towing. And as we mentioned, durability, right? That's one thing. The get it in there to service them. If you have to do this yourself, or it could be expensive, I guess.
Yeah,
probably more expensive in the long run because of maintenance. I would think.
You're probably talking like $7,500 at least to bring it into a bike shop to have it serviced.
And honestly, the prices, I mean, from the kits that I was looking at, the difference between buying a kit to add to your bike, the difference between a geared motor and a direct drive motor, it was just about identical. So, the added expense that you're going to have with a geared motor is something that you have to consider, somewhere down the road, whether it be a year down the road, or I don't know how often it would have to be serviced. I think it depends on use, really.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Well, one other thing I would mention about the direct drive systems that is a drawback, small one, it's something called cogging.
Cogging. I saw someone trying to depict this on one of the reviews, and I didn't quite see what it was.
So cogging is where you've got these magnets, right?
Yeah.
Inside the direct drive. They're constantly rotating because they're in the part that moves along with the rotation force of the wheel.
Yeah.
If you have your system unpowered, so you don't have any pedelec going, okay. So it's the electromagnets are off, those magnets are somewhat attracted to the materials at the core of that wheel, the stationary part. So that part is stationary with respect to the ground, like with respect to the rest of the bike.
And who wouldn't be? That's a good looking part.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're trying to pedal, that means that these magnets are slightly attracted to that stationary part. They're resisting moving. So you have to overcome that magnetic resistance to get them to move. It's not necessarily a significant, like it's not like you're going to be like straining to move forward a few inches, but it means you have to work a little harder
initially.
Yeah. To get it moving because it has this drag effect.
Oh, I got it.
So it's called cogging, but really you could think of it as drag in the sense that it's a magnetic drag.
That is listed as one of the cons on this in this article that I'm kind of following along with here. And the article, I mean, it's from a site called ebikekit.com. Mm. So that's where you can also buy a kit, but it was a review blog post that was done by somebody. And one of the cons that they mentioned for direct drive is drag when you pedal.
Right.
Now the other ones, you know, the geared systems, I guess, don't have that kind of drag, but there's more noise because those gears are constantly spinning in there as
exactly.
well. The other thing, the other cons, I guess, if we should want to just list them now for the direct drive system are that it typically has less range. They're a lot bigger and they're heavier than the geared systems would be because the geared systems can be much smaller. Again, it's just based on gearing, how efficient you want to make them. And we've talked about batteries. And I felt I missed my chance to mention this, but the size of the battery matters as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you want a big, powerful battery. You're going to go a little bit fast. It's going to be able to power that, that motor, whether it's a direct drive or whether it's a geared system, it's going to be able to expend more juice to make that thing go a little faster.
Right.
It's very similar to if you think about the Tesla cars.
Mm-hmm.
There's the version I think that has a 60 kilowatt. I think I'm getting these numbers right. I hope I am. 60 kilowatt battery, and then there's an 85 kilowatt battery, and that's the higher performance version.
Right.
So it depends on the battery size and the output of that battery, how fast you're going to go. Also, the size of the motor, the output of the motor. You need to get the right pairing.
And there's some other really cool things that we're starting to see paired with these electric bikes, especially the wheel systems that are coming out. There are two in particular that I was really interested in, but there's more than that. You actually mentioned another one when we were talking before we came in here, but the Copenhagen or Copenhagen wheel from MIT and the Flycly wheel, which some have suggested might have taken more than a little bit of inspiration from the Copenhagen wheel.
Ah, but the truth is these direct drive motors all look the same. It's all the same idea. So that's hard to say.
The implementation is really what's important here because it also depends on the sensors that you include. And that's where we're starting to see more complexity. Like when you break it down, a direct drive in-hub system is one of the simplest electric motors that you can have. But the complexity comes in these other sensors that come to play. Like some of these kits use, you know, how do they know when to kick in and help give you pedal assist, for example? Some of them, you mount a small magnet on one of the spokes of your wheel. And mounted to a stationary part of the bicycle is a sensor. And every time the magnet passes the sensor, it clocks it. So it knows, all right, the wheel's having this many rotations per minute. Therefore, they're pedaling this amount. Therefore, I will kick in this much assistance.
Yeah. You know, about 30 years ago, I had a speedometer on a bicycle that worked the same way.
Yeah.
It's really simple. It's really basic. And there's a lot of sensors in automobiles that work that same way as well. It's just a counter.
Right.
It's just counting one, two, three. It's just more like one, one, one.
Right.
But it's just every rotation is saying, it's just registering that.
Right.
As movement.
Right. And then there are other ones that are torque sensors, right?
Yeah.
These are calculating how much force the bicyclist is applying to the pedals. And it kicks in the electric motor to help counteract that force to keep it either very smooth or to just say like, all right, we have a threshold here and anything beyond this threshold, we need to kick in the electronic assist so that way we're not making the bicyclist pedal too hard.
And that's a bit more complex.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. And then it also means that it tends to be more expensive. Like the systems that have that version of sensor are more expensive than the ones that just count rotations.
And some of these are wired systems and some are wireless systems.
Right.
And we talked about, the control of these systems and some of the readouts, you know, because a lot of the kits come with an LCD dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell you all the information you need to know about, you know, the range, you know, what you have left, battery power, et cetera, you know,
you can
all that.
Adjust how much help you're getting, like whether it's, a little bit of help or a lot of help, that kind of stuff.
You can put it in different modes, like eco mode, which is, you know, less help and it saves the battery. I guess you have an extended amount of range, or you can put it in performance mode or whatever they, you know, call it by the manufacturer. But some of them are controlled with your smartphone.
Right.
And now, this is one of the downsides of this, though. I mean, it's really cool that you can do that. And you can mount it right in the center of your handlebars, you know, right where you can see it. But you still have to avert your eyes from the traffic or wherever you are in order to look down at that smartphone. And then you have to interact with it. So it's sort of akin to texting and driving or texting and biking.
Right.
In a way. I know they make the controls very easy. You know, it's large buttons. You just touch and swipe. And once you get accustomed to where that is, you might be able to do that, you know, relatively quickly. You know, you won't have to stare at it for quite as long as you will when it's new to you.
But, you know, the more options you have, the more complex the interface is going to be. So, for example, if you have the Copenhagen wheel, it's got a lot of different options, right?
Yeah.
And you have an app that connects to the wheel, and it's using low-energy Bluetooth, so it's not sipping a whole lot of power. Although, in fact, I would say that for your smartphone, the most power that's being consumed is just powering the display.
Mm-hmm.
Like that display is going to suck up more battery power than the low energy Bluetooth. However, all that being said, if you've got lots and lots of options, that means you got to swipe through stuff too. And that makes it even more complicated because your attention is taken away from your surroundings and the road even more so that you can switch. They also have options for things like regenerative braking or regenerating some of that electricity, by putting it into exercise mode, which is where you're kind of working against the motor. The idea being that, it's sort of reversing this trend. Instead of, the electricity causing the motor to turn and thus giving you help, you are pushing the motor, which is causing electricity to flow the other direction and recharge the battery. It's turning a motor into a dynamo, in other words.
Yeah, and now one of the models that I saw, demoed, I think it was maybe the Copenhagen wheel, is the one that if you're backpedaling as you're in motion, so the motor, you're saying to the motor, you don't want it to assist you in pedaling at this point. Mm-hmm. You backpedal, that's the regenerative mode. That's right. You're gaining battery power, I guess, by doing that. And you can also make a hill work for you in the same way, right?
Yeah, when you're going down the hill, you put it in exercise mode, which normally would mean you'd have to pedal harder to get to wherever you were going. Like, let's say you're on a totally flat surface. You've got everything turned off, and you ride across this flat surface. You're using a certain amount of energy in order to do that. If you turned on exercise mode, you'd have to put in a little extra energy because now you're working against that motor to kind of regenerate electricity. If you're going down a hill, you let gravity do that extra work for you. So you switch from pedelec assist to exercise, and you can regenerate some of that electricity, giving your battery a little bit extra juice so that you can make it all the way to work. But that means having to switch modes in mid-ride, and that's where we're getting into this, like, how do you do that in a way that's not distracting the bicycle.
Well, see, with that one, you're not looking down at the screen and swiping through. You're just physically doing something. And I thought that was a great way to handle that. You slightly backpedal. Everybody can remember that, and you don't have to look down to do that. And I was thinking, why don't they start to incorporate some of these controls in the handlebars as if it would be a game controller? Because once you learn a game controller, and you know whether it takes you 10 minutes or if it takes you 10 weeks to learn that game controller, you know, maybe not 10 weeks, but you understand where it is. You don't have to look down, you know, find out where the X button is or where the A button is.
Right.
It becomes natural. It's muscle memory. That's the term. So if you were to have a system that was universal, mm-hmm. you know, that all e-bike designers used, this, you know, that used the same hand controls on the handlebars, the handle grips.
Yeah.
It would be something that I think everybody could benefit from because, you know, you could still have your phone there and you could have that, you know, set up so that, yeah, I'm just going to put it in eco mode and I'm going to leave it there. But every other control, you know, from that point on, I can use hand controls without looking down.
Right.
I think that would be great for somebody who's in traffic and crowded cities like what we're talking mm-hmm. about. Now, most of them aren't as advanced as that we're talking about. That's the top end. Really expensive ones. The ones that I'm sure that, you know, most of, you know, the people in these crowded cities that have these kind of early versions of e-bikes, they're not that complex. They respond more to the physical commands, like what we were talking about with the backpedaling for regeneration and things like that.
And some of them do have things like thumb throttles or thumb controls to either set it on, pedal assist, or they might have a twist throttle for the fully powered electric bikes.
Sure, like a mini bike or a motorbike would have. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are those versions, but the ones that I've seen, like the Flykly and the Copenhagen, both of those are completely one wheel systems that then hook up. Like once you detach your existing rear wheel and then install the Copenhagen wheel or the Flykly wheel, then all you do is you hook it up to your smartphone, and mm-hmm. then that's what activates it. So it also has some interesting safety features, like you can deactivate it so that if someone were to take your wheel, it wouldn't be of any use to them because they couldn't turn it back on again.
Yeah, we mentioned theft, right? Because that's something that a lot of people would be concerned with if their back wheel of their bike is now worth $2,000.
Right.
Just one wheel, right? I mean, it's just a matter of two bolts to get that thing off of there, right? So you park your bike and it's worth $2,000, the back end, and then whatever else the rest of the bike costs.
Right.
Probably an expensive bike, I would guess. So what prevents somebody from just either walking away with your bike, which I guess they could do anyways, or just taking that wheel off? I mean, you'd have to be very creative about how you chain this thing up or what you do with it. But there's a safety in place, I guess, if it does walk away.
Right. Yeah, there's a couple of them, right? There's one that has the electric motor turn off, and it doesn't turn on again until it recognizes the handshake with your particular smartphone because you've paired it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some that have GPS in them, so that should the wheel go wandering, you can track down where it is. Kind of similar to, like, where's my iPhone?
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
It will alert you if it's moving when you're not near it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I like that.
That's a useful feature. The Copenhagen one, I think, is $7.99, and I think the FlyCly is something like $600 or $699. They're about $100 off. I remember that.
Hmm.
And so they're both pretty expensive. I mean, if you're looking at a brand new bicycle, depending upon what market you're in, it could be the same price as your bike.
And that's just a wheel.
Yeah,
so,
just one wheel.
And the e-bike kits that I was mentioning, you know, that's that I keep saying that slide. I hope you don't mind, but it's ebikekit.com because they have a lot of good information there as well. And they range from about $775 up to about $2,000 was the top one I saw. But you're talking about different, completely different packages. Like that $775 kit, it has no battery and it has no charger.
Right.
So you're going to have to add on to that thing, right? The other one has everything, as I mentioned. But the difference, one of the biggest differences is in the top speed and the range of these things. So, mm-hmm. you know, the lower kits tend to have a lower top speed and a slightly less range, you know, or lower range, I guess, in, mm-hmm. as far as the distance you can travel. You know, maybe the low end one is like, you know, 12 to 15 miles.
Right.
With power assist. And the upper range one can go all the way up to about 54 miles. So a 54 mile bike ride. On one charge, that's pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
and you know, top speed of about 28 miles per hour. Now, you might be limited in some cities to what speed you're allowed to travel
sure.
because there are restrictions on some of these things.
Yeah, in the UK, it's 25 kilometers an hour, which is about 15 miles per hour.
Yeah, and here yeah. it's a little bit faster in the States here. I think it was, what, 20?
Yeah, I think so.
And then there's that odd, strange thing. It's not so odd, really, when you really think about it, because everybody's going to want to go a little bit faster, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be that group that wants the sport version, right? So there's the S Pedal X for those people, and that stands for Speedy Pedal X. And the difference is they have a more powerful motor. You know, of course, you can do unlimited pedal assist if you want, so it can be kind of like a power on demand type system.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to take that back again. I don't know if we'll do that, but it has unlimited. When I'm saying it now, I'm understanding it. It's unlimited pedal assist. So, you know, once you reach that 20 miles per hour, it doesn't
right.
kind of cut out like the ones that are limited.
So
would
if
do.
You're capable of powering it further, it will continue to assist you.
And you would be because see, it's one of those things where like you, because it's a pedal assist system, you would be able to get up to 20 miles per hour, no problem.
Right.
And then once you continue, it's like you're putting out less energy to go faster. And then you put out just a little bit more and you can go way faster.
Right.
And it just carries on. And I'm sure there's got to be an upper limit. There has to be a top limit, but really, the speed cutout is set far, far higher. And for this type of system, you know, things like, you know, helmets and protective gear are required because they realize that it's closer to a scooter or a motorcycle even in some
right.
cases. Depends on how fast you can go. But the Speedy Pedal X are something for, you know, the people that want to kind of take it to the next level.
Right. I don't think I'm going to need anything quite at that level
yeah.
if I do invest in one of these. And I gotta say that something else we should mention is that the in-hub systems do have other things you gotta remember. For one, it's going to offset the weight of your bicycle. Like it's going to put a lot more weight on whatever wheel you're replacing.
Yeah. Because... And we're talking like ballpark 10 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right around where it is. It's a, you know, I've seen 9 pound systems and I've seen 13 pound systems.
Right.
So somewhere in there.
Yeah. So that's going to be something to keep in mind. As opposed to some of the other, like the mid drive systems, they kind of balance the weight out across the frame of the bicycle. So you don't have one section of the bike that is heavier than it otherwise would be.
Yeah.
But you know, it's,
well, that's important for riding, you know, for the way it feels on
sure.
the road, but it's even more important when you're trying to carry it up the stairs and put it in your house at night.
Right. Yeah. So I'll be sure to keep all of my listeners posted if I invest in one of these things.
I would love to see it. If you ride that into work, I would love to come down to the parking structure or whatever, and
yeah.
Maybe even take it for a quick spin.
Oh, sure,
around the block.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's funny because it will mean that my wheel will be much more valuable, or at least cost a lot more than my bike did because I got my bike for free. So so automatically the wheel will be more expensive.
A free bike.
Yeah.
That's nice.
There's a thing called FreeCycle Atlanta where people give away stuff when they don't have space for it anymore.
And you found a bike?
And guy was giving away his bike.
Wow.
So I got a bike. It's not fancy. It's not a super fancy bike, but
yeah.
it's a bike.
Do they have any boats there?
You know,
I'd like a boat, but I don't necessarily want to buy a boat.
The second happiest day of my life was when I bought my boat. The happiest day of my life was when I sold it. All right. Well, Scott, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, of course. It was my pleasure.
And in addition to the website you mentioned, I also want to mention electricbikereview.com, which has some great articles and some great videos. If you are interested in buying an electric bike or buying a conversion kit, they have everything you would need to know. And they also review them. So you can actually look and see if they've reviewed the system you're interested in and see what they have to say about it.
Always helpful.
Yeah. They had like a 15-minute long review of the Copenhagen wheel, for example, which was very interesting. They went into great detail about it. So, and Scott, if people want to find your stuff, where do they go?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We have our own website, which is carstuffshow.com. And, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. We are CarStuffHSW.
Yep. And same here for Tech Stuff. We're TechStuffHSW on Facebook and Twitter and over on Tumblr. And you can also send me an email, techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Following this episode, we're going to have a couple of rerun episodes. That's just so that we have enough buffer between when we break this studio down and when our next studio is ready to go. And I didn't want you guys to go a single week without any episodes. So don't be frightened if you hear some reruns. Just temporary, I promise. And you will hear new stuff from me really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.